Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Are allergies putting a damper on your day? Discover the relief you deserve at Aspire Allergy and Sinus. Our dedicated team is here to help you stop masking symptoms and get to the root of the problem. Say goodbye to constant sneezing, congestion, and itchy eyes with our comprehensive allergy testing and personalized treatment plans. Take the first step towards a healthier, happier you. Visit AspireAllergy.com today because you deserve to thrive, not just survive.
This week saw a powerful portrayal of a young man in the throes of an emotional breakdown. This story has highlighted the hidden plague that is mental health issues amongst men. If you need a shoulder to lean on or someone to talk to, we recommend the following services. If you're in Britain, you can call the Samaritans. Call on 116123, or you can try Young Minds. You can text YM85258. If you're in the USA, call Mental Health America on 1-800-273-8255. Or to contact the Jed Foundation, text HOME to 741741.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by Managers.
This week's Dumpty Dum is from Marie Bray and is sponsored by Kay Hopper.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm Royfield Brown. He's a rather disappointed Englishman. And today I'm joined by the most correct of all football pundits, who is...
Jacqueline Berthaud in Saint-Gwen, Brittany, France. On this episode, we'll hear from Witherspoon, Claire Asprey, Mary Bray, and David Mullis. Hiya, Mr. Brown. How you doing?
I'm fine. Right, let's just move Jolly on, good. Shall we?
No, I think we get it over and done with. Let's get it over and done with.
Well, it's done.
Did you have a nice evening?
What, for my birthday? Yes, it was all wonderful. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on. So, plus, we have Tweet of the Week from our Purple Pumpkin. And we have the social media roundup from Stephen. And don't forget, folks, we have content on YouTube. Type in Dumpty Dum, and you can find 2 years' worth of interviews with the great and the good, the actors who play the characters that we love on The Archers over there. Now, we have news on our event. Now, folks, we have news on our event. Now, pencil off, or put up to one side, or whatever the heck the expression is. I can't think right now. I'm still in somewhat of a football depression. Saturday, the 22nd of April, 2023, in Birmingham, we are going to be having an event. Now, that is the pivotal day. We're going to be doing something with the Academic Archers, and they've actually got our Sonny Ormond to come to their event, which will also be happening on that day. We are going to be doing a couple of live recordings of the podcast, and I believe we're also going to be doing something on the 23rd, Sunday the 23rd. If you would like hotel accommodation, we're going to sort all of that out right here and now. We're still putting things together, but we've spoken to Birmingham Town Hall. It looks like it's actually going to be in the Symphony Hall, in one of the rooms around there, that we're actually going to do the event. So the dates are Saturday the 22nd and Sunday the 23rd of April 2023. Those are the 2 days. It's going to be the Academic Archers mashup with the Dumb Dum crew in Birmingham, England. There you go. So don't get it all miscombobulated and turn up to Birmingham, Alabama, because you've been the wrong Birmingham. More details to come, but make a note of that in your diaries. So that's news of our event. We need Dumb Dums, good people. That is what Marie Bray and our Stephen et al. Always seem to do at the start of the show. We need to spread the joy around. So if you would like to hum and maybe get out your banjo or even your bass guitar and play along to Barwick Green, send that to us. That would be most excellent. You can do that by either going on to SpeakPipe, and or you can do that via WhatsApp, which is +447 9571 67696. Or if that fails you, you can even email it through to royfield@gmail.com. We need dum-dums. We need a good pile of them for the new year. Just like stacking up wood logs, we need to pile up our dum-dums. Don't forget, at the end of the show, we'll be welcoming new members to our Facebook group, and we'll have the results of our proposal survey.
Mm-hmm. But first, let's look at the week in Ambridge from our Suey Queen or Tart.
Hello, lovely people. It's Suey here, Queen or Tart on the Twitters, and another week in Ambridge. It's been quite a week in Ambridge, where Fallon proves she is at least clueless, if not actively thoughtless, telling Ed and Emma about nights out with Harrison and their plans, which all involve spending money. Fallon's nose was put right out of joint, having the same taste in coats as Emma, but she has somewhat deeper pockets. Emma is planning a life of crime, log rustling with Ed from the wood tidying at the Rewilding Project. I think it was someone on Academic Archers who pointed out that the wood will need seasoning before it can be used, and they won't be able to immediately cash in. Jill proved that everything can be solved with a chocolate cake. Well, except for being estranged from half your family, where a cake is simply not going to cut it this time. Just a word to the wise, Jill. You took years to get over Lizzie's abortion, but you don't have the luxury of time anymore. Please sort it all out together. And talking of Ben, he's having trouble working out what's real. He told Leonard that he thought about killing himself because of Vince's outburst in the pub. He seems to be getting some actual help. I am very glad that Borchester NHS seems to have available resources, unlike much of the rest of the country. The news gets to Pip, who I didn't hate as much as normal this week. She encouraged Ben to talk to David and Roof, who finally sat down for a conversation with Ben, and we can hope things move forwards from here. Tracy and Jazza had a barney over general domestic things. These two could bicker as an Olympic sport. The Ambridge plot fairy had them kiss and make up and decide not to argue anymore. Well, how long do we see that lasting? Tracy is going to ask Jazza to marry her on New Year's Eve. Chelsea's very keen, and already planning the wedding dress, whereas Brad, fresh back from his maths course in Manchester, where he stayed in a swanky hotel, then stripped anything not nailed down in the room, is somewhat less keen after performing a full SWOT analysis of the situation. He is only prepared to attend the extremely theoretical wedding if he pretends it's not an actual wedding and doesn't have to do anything. Joy, fresh from her awesome role in last week's rescue, is having a crisis over Kirsty and Mick's easy friendship. She has clearly had a past. She doesn't have anything to worry about, according to Fallon, and she needs to work out what she's feeling for Mick. They have a heart-to-heart, and Mick says she's not an old frump, and he's happy to take his cues from her. Oh, if he turns out to be a shit, script writers, take this as fair warning. I am coming for you. Until next week. Till then, have a good one, my lovelies.
Ooh, Thank you for that, Suey. How was your last week in Ambridge, Madame Berto?
It was a funny old week, I have to say, for me, because it was a bit bitty in places, and there were things I didn't quite get. I don't really get the choir thing. I don't know how it's going to end up, although I did like the thing with Joy feeling all unloved and unsure, and Mick confirming what a lovely guy he is. But, well, as Sue says, I'll just keep fingers crossed that he keeps to be a lovely guy. He's fond of her and she's got history. So in the end, we learn her history. That's good. She doesn't irritate me. Pip wasn't as bad. Mm-hmm. Just to say, because okay. I know you always say me, I'm harsh.
Well, you
Pip.
Are.
She wasn't as brutal, bad as she has
you are.
Been.
Brutal. You're as brutal as a guillotine you are normally.
Well, yeah, of course. That's it. It's in the genes.
I'm somewhat looking forward to the wedding proposal. And for me, it's obvious that we've got to the worst of how Ben is going to get.
Do you think?
Yeah. If you to do a graph of the descent of Ben's mental anxiety, he's now got treatment. David and Ruth talking quite honestly and candidly about how they missed the signs, I thought was really quite touching. The symbol that we have got to the very bottom of his descent is the fact that they know he contemplated suicide. It can't get any worse than this. And he does sound like he's slowly putting himself back together. He is getting treatment, which is wonderful. But for me, all sounds a little bit too soon.
Yeah, me too. I think it's going too quickly. Yeah. Everything about it's been very quick. But he is able to talk. And on one level, I'm delighted it's Leonard that he talked to, because I love Leonard. Such a nice man.
Kristen McKiddy or Leonard? Who do you love more?
Oh, gracious. You can't choose between your best boys.
Wow.
Oh, you've broken my chain of thought. It was about Leonard and the chocolate cake. Mm-hmm. Now that I was disappointed by. If that was Jill sending a peace offering. That's the expression I'm searching for. Mm-hmm. I can only think of what it was in French. A peace offering. It was wrong. Mm-hmm. She should have done it herself.
She doesn't quite have the language, does she? She doesn't know how to frame things. She's put her foot in it right royally. She's trying to just gently dip her toe into the water just to see how it's going to be received.
Yeah, and she's naturally a feeder.
There you go.
She feeds people.
Yes. So I understand what she did. It's a case of, here's a little peace offering, you know, just a little one. See how we go. Yes, maybe her marching round there. March is the wrong word. Round
wobbling.
Mea culpa. How are you, grandson? There. Clasping him to her bosom. Should have been, I'm so sorry. You know, how are you? Should really be what she did. But anyway. But, it, you know, everything seems to go through Leonard these days, doesn't it?
It does. I think that's a sign of the fact that the Jill, maybe the actress who plays Jill, is creeping slowly away from the Archers, seeping away.
I think so, considering how integral she is to this storyline. We're not hearing that much of her, are we? But instead, we have Leonard, who is Kofi Annan. He's shuffle diplomacy.
Indeed.
That's what he's doing.
Yeah. You know. So I have to give complete high points from me to Tim Bendick, because I felt his guilt, his sadness, his fear for his son, it's given him a wobble. It made him sharp with Leonard, which David doesn't normally have the guts to be sharp with anyone. Kudos to him. I thought the acting was brilliant this week.
Couldn't agree with you more. The scenes between David and Ruth were really poignant, really touching. Any parent could understand what they were going through, the worry that their son was contemplating the darkest of dark outcomes to his situation. You know, all you want to do is wish the best for your children and to wrap them up. And they portrayed that beautifully. But instead of us talking about the last week in Ambridge, we should listen to our wonderful caller inners.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
First off, it's the woman who vies for your slot as my podcasting wife. It's our Claire from Clapham.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Clapham here in a very frosty Clapham. Yes, just a thought on this week.
Never ask a teenager whether you're boring, and especially don't ask a completely awful teenager if you're boring. What were they expecting? So, yeah, and this whole Emma doing suddenly something really weird and illegal as a result of George thinking she's boring really marked her down in my estimations. I thought she had way more sense than that. We've been kind of waiting for Emma to come back in to the Archers so she can be the one to talk sense and, like, be, I don't know, pull all the Grundys into shape a bit and certainly give George a slap around the chops or some sensible parenting equivalent. I do not advocate slapping your children around the chops just for the sake of it. But yeah, she just seems to have lost the plot. And she's gone back, actually, into that kind of resentful, jealous, like, hard done by Emma, which, you know, I think can be a real power for good, to be honest. But this whole thing with the coat and Fallon, what's all that about? Like, I don't understand. I saw a post on Facebook about how surely Fallon and Harrison are potentially having a harder time of it financially than Ed and Emma. I mean, you know, just because they're Grundys, they have to be having a hard time. But yeah, it's all a bit weird. I was sorry to see Emma come back and then just behave like this. I expect better of Emma, if I'm perfectly honest. And certainly never ask George for an opinion. That's just a stupid place to start. So yeah, anyway, I hope they sort their lives out a bit and put their sensible shoes back on. Anyway, keep up the good work and I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
Right then. Ha-ha. Why don't you go first, madame?
Yeah, I agree with Claire. That was my first thought. Why would you ask George whether you were boring? George is not the person. Plus, he's a teenager on top of his general personality problem. But I don't think it came from the George thing, the whole ridiculous wood, stealing wood, etc. story. It came from feeling like they were second-class citizens and different to their mates who came over for dinner and told them about the wonderful high life they were having post-COVID.
I don't know whether this is so much an obvious setup, but they're going to do something which is illegal. And what's prompted it is them having a dinner party with a policeman.
With a copper, yeah.
You know, is it just me? Am I saying that's going to be the point of tension, conflict in this storyline?
Yeah.
That it's going to be PC harassment Burns. You know, who is that like that? You know, and you hear a crackle of twigs and whatever. And then you go, oh, Ed. And of course, he's going to have to shop in his pals and he's going to have this ethical dilemma. But if you think you are boring, a spot of thievery probably isn't what you need to go in for. Normally, what an upper working class, lower middle class couple would do is maybe let's go and have tango lessons together or something or another. Yeah, it's like, come on now. Don't get me wrong. They're hard up and they're Horribins/Grundys. So a little bit of cutting corners when it comes to legality is fundamentally in their DNA, right?
But not Emma. She's straight as a die. She's on the parish council, for goodness sake. You know, that's not her thing at all.
Well, it shouldn't. It shouldn't be her thing. Let's put it that way.
No, it shouldn't be.
As I've said on numerous occasions, I'm not one from the countryside. Me personally, and I know nothing about this, but if you see a couple of logs on the ground and you got a wood fire, wouldn't you pick them up? I would have thought, as out and out villainry goes, this is low down on the ranks, pretty low down. But I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, but they're talking about freshly cut wood that they're going to make insect hotels out of. Now, as you can see, I'm often sitting by a log open fire when I'm recording Dumpty Dum because we're trying not to put too much heating on. Mm-hmm. And so the log fire definitely works. But I wouldn't pick up a log today and put it on my fire tonight. You wouldn't be able to hear me for crackling and spitting. You pick up your logs that you find in the woods, if no one's looking, I suppose, and you put them in a shed or an outhouse or so under a sheet, plastic sheet somewhere for about at least a year, if not two, to dry out and season. Otherwise, there's too much sap in them and they don't burn.
Hmm.
So
sounds to me like you've done a little spot of this before in the past. Please. You very clearly said you pick them up from the forest and then take them home. It's obviously not illegal in France, in Brittany, I take it. to take other people.
No, it isn't illegal at all. And in fact, I'll tell you what, the county council, we have an old railway line that runs through our village and it's been made into a voie verte where people ride their bikes and it runs for miles and miles and miles. It goes for about 120 kilometres, but it passes through our village and the county council maintain it. And when the county council cut back a lot, there were a lot of villagers here with their quads and trailers picking up stuff. This was last winter, picking up stuff, clearing up, tidying up after them. So I don't think it is illegal here in France. I have never done it. You do realise that you're talking to the lady of the manor, Royfield Brown. If I was seen walking around with a log or two under my arm, people would definitely be saying, she's nicking from the poor. Well, Monsieur Lefren, he's a regular thiever of things in our village.
Who do you want? Mr. Who?
Monsieur Lefren. He's an old guy, an old retired farmer. Mm. He walks a lot. He picks up stuff. And you see piles of broken branches and things along the voie verte, along the old railway track. And then you will see him in the afternoons walking along with his trailer and he puts things in his trailer.
So he's your Joe Grundy.
Yeah, definitely our great Joe Grundy. Even worse, he goes around the cemetery and, yes, exactly, and he empties flower pots that have got dead flowers and things on, tidies things up for people in the cemetery, and you see him walking across the fields. There's actually an old track across the fields, despite it being ploughed, et cetera, to his house, and he gets all his tomato plant plots and everything from the cemetery. I don't think Joe Grundy, I don't think he makes cider anymore, but he used to.
Sacre bleu,
yeah, exactly. Come on, Harrison. In fact, it's called Joël Lecor next, Shane.
Wait a minute, what are the local gendarmes doing round there?
Well, the gendarmes won't be bothered, but we do have a police municipal. He's a bobby on a beat on a scooter.
You know what? Saint-Gwen sounds almost as action-packed as Ambridge.
We've even got spiritual homes in Saint-Gwen. And if anybody wants to look it up, it's called Le Zen Jardin de Kistilik. And you can find it. And she's built these amazing fairy castles. I'll see if I can put something on Dumpty Dums.
Who's the local Brian Aldridge?
Local Brian Aldridge. Well, this is not really...
No.
Now, we've got a chateau up the hill, but that's in the next village.
Monsieur Alberto. Are you Jenny then?
Maybe.
Are you Jenny?
Well, I've got an auger. She hasn't anymore. I've got an auger. Yeah, I'm sure I am Jenny, really. Yeah.
Right.
I'm not as silent as her, though.
No, you're
sorry,
not Jenny,
Claire. We've gone completely off the point.
You get two in people's faces.
You know.
You did that coup d'etat in the mayor's office last week.
I did. And what's more, they've given me access to the Commune de Guerlédan's Facebook. I'm now administrator of their Facebook
you
page
are,
because
Jenny.
I keep complaining
Remember
about...
Remember she always used to talk about the website.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. So I'm not Jenny, but I'm becoming more and more like her. I don't have a walk. I don't own a walk.
Not yet, you don't. You might get one for Christmas from all the listeners of Dumpty Dum who have christened you their Saint-Gwen Jenny. On that note, we should have a touch of the Lower East West Side with our Witherspoon, who is our resident sports therapist.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Royfield, Jacqueline, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. First, we send our condolences to all the English fans out there. It was a tough loss. On to Ben once again. I thought the scriptwriters handled the topic of his suicidal ideation well. It's the most challenging scenario that clinicians face, complete with many ethical issues. If Ben were a minor, then the crisis clinician would have shared this information with his parents, but Ben is an adult, and he would have needed to give permission to do so. I wonder if the crisis clinician in A&E did ask Ben if they could bring David into the meeting so that Ben could share his thoughts with his father. It would have been very helpful in creating a crisis treatment plan at home. In fact, I may have made it a condition on allowing Ben to return home. If Ben had refused, then I would have said to him that he needed to be admitted. I know there's a terribly long wait for inpatient beds. In the United States, patients are waiting for days in emergency rooms for psych beds. I think we're a little more prone to practice defensive medicine because of the worry of malpractice suits. But I'm glad Ben is doing better and he's opened up to his family. He put Leonard in a difficult situation, but Leonard did the right thing in sharing the information with Pip, who also handled things well. Remember, non-healthcare people do not operate under the same ethical considerations as clinicians do. The immediate family is being very compassionate toward Ben. I just wish David would stop describing the pregnancy as Ben's big mistake. Ben and Chelsea had impulsive, unprotected sex. It was an error in judgment and could easily have not ended in a pregnancy. And where is Jill? Surely Leonard has told her what's going on, and she would have been there to make peace with and comfort her grandson. It goes back to something being very wrong with Jill. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for that, Mr. Spoon. What do you reckon to his rundown of things? The little note there about Leonard and the fact that Leonard isn't in the same kind of ethical dilemma as a health professional was a wise one to point out. And I think,
very wise.
Yes, he did the right thing. Somebody saying to me that they contemplated suicide, especially if there has been some level of an emotional breakdown, you've got to take that incredibly seriously. And you do need to tell their nearest and dearest, you know, literally regardless of who that person is, you know. But what else to what Mr. Spoon said?
He suggested that Pip handled the whole situation well. Mm-hmm. And I agree. She did, although I was slightly cheesed off when she said, "Don't worry, you'll be back to your own self soon." I think there's a lack of understanding of how serious the situation was.
But isn't that just something, dare I say, that we say?
Yeah, I guess so, look, Royfield. I think it's a thing that we say to encourage somebody who's in a crisis, but I felt heartless from Pip. you know,
not
like
everyone
me,
can
I'm being
be
horrible,
joy, can they?
It.
Not everyone can be joy.
No, it can't. Not everybody can be joy. It's not, and the world isn't full of joy, is it, Royfield? Because he did actually send condolences to the English, so I think we ought to mention that as well.
Moving swiftly on. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know. This isn't a podcast. We're not allowed to wang on about it, according to one of our dear friends. But my daughter, who plays football for Romance FC in the East End of London, said, it's such a beautiful game. That's the beauty of it. You can play the best you can, be the best team on the pitch and still lose because of a ball going into the back of the net. And that's how I felt about that match yesterday.
Absolutely. Just if we have to talk about football, and I, for one, don't like the incursion, of anything non-Archers related
other
on Dumdy-Dum.
Yes.
You know, I'm very.
You're very strict about these
very
things.
Strict about building that wall between this podcast and the outside world. Everybody knows that. But if we are forced by circumstance to mention that thing that happened yesterday, England can hold their heads up high.
They can.
In terms of feats in World Cups and Euros, you've got to look at the performance and not the result. And nobody need feel ashamed of themselves. We can't say England didn't turn up. We can't say they didn't have the desire. They went toe-to-toe with the world champions and actually shaded that in terms of performance. But it's the beauty of football, or the tragedy of football, but actually it's the beauty, as your daughter said. And as somebody clinically explained this to me once, it's the shots to success ratio, which is so low in football. So hence, you can have the better team sometimes losing on the day. Whereas in something like basketball, the shots to success ratio is high. So the best team always wins. Not in football. And that's the reason why we love it. Moving swiftly on, say no more about,
indeed,
you know, about football, because I'm bored of it. I'm not watching any more of the World Cup. To the World Cup. Bag of nonsense. Now we go to Marie Ray.
Hi, Royfield, Jacqueline, and all lovely Dumpty Dummers. It's Marie calling from Winchester. And I've been great listening. I just listened to your last week's podcast. Okay, so I've got four things I wanted to talk about. First of all, Tracy wanting to propose to Jazza. I think Jazza's going to scheme his own thing. And obviously, he doesn't want to worry Tracy with money, etc. I think he's going to do a fait accompli on New Year's Eve and get her to dress up and will actually do everything so that they get married on New Year's Eve. Who knows? Could be fun. Also, David, yes, he has to cook Christmas dinner. He's decided this. Why? because otherwise, come Christmas lunchtime, Ruth will come out and say, I've got some turkey lasagna for you, and you can wash it down with some nice cow brush lager, or something to that effect. Very impressed with the whole acting on the mental health issue with Ben. Joy was amazing. I think she has some obvious experience, which could be to do with her daughter Rochelle, yet to come out. You know, she might have even taken her own life. Who knows? But yeah, her emotional maturity there was unbelievable, really incredible. And lastly, I have to disagree with you, Royfield. You put the jam on and then the cream, because the cream has a subtle flavour and cream is all about texture. Texture you need on the roof of the mouth, not on the other, not in the middle. So that's why we have the cream on the top. I got the word wrong, just like I got the name wrong the other week. Caroline, I don't know where that came from. Yes, Joy. I meant to say emotional intelligence, not emotional maturity. Obviously, she has maturity. Anyway, just correcting myself. Bye for now.
Thank you for that, Marie. Well, there you go. I got told about the reasons why you got to put the cream on the top of a scone, because it goes to the roof of the mouth and it's, you know, it has a subtle texture.
It's a texture thing. Yeah, I think a lot of people agree with Marie.
Well, they're wrong.
Marie,
they're wrong. They're wrong. Gobbledygook.
Well, oh, obviously they're wrong, Royfield, because they're dead. You even put that bar in. You even put that bar in.
And just like, and, you know, and as for that poll on Dum-de-dum, far be it from me to have a go at about 70% of our listeners, but I'm having a go at 70% of our listeners. You're all wrong. You need to take a long, hard look at yourselves. And when you figure out how to put the cream and the jam in the correct order, you'll have a taste sensation when you chow down on a scone. Go do it, then come back, report back to me. Have a new poll. 100% will be behind me. 100%.
Did you notice Fallon mentioned scones and jam this week on a picnic? Yeah, I thought of you when I saw that, when I heard that. Not often that I think of you in the week, but that scone story with the wasps. I thought of you twice this week, once because it was your birthday, and once because, more times
because
I thought about you
about
and the thing we're
birthday,
not mentioning.
Because when you've had as many as me, what's the point of having another one?
Indeed,
and it's not a celebration, indeed. It's a commiseration, as I said to my mother today. When you have the amount that I've had, it's just, oh, please.
Well, just think how your mother must feel.
Well, she's feeling pretty good right now because she's in Los Angeles with Uncle Ken, who's getting a little bit better. But I do get your point, madam.
Good.
I do get your point.
We haven't talked about Marie's call and Tracy's proposal to
Jazza. Why don't you lead us into that line of conversation?
I actually feel like she's been egged on, Tracy, mm-hmm. by Chelsea more than really wanting to go for it herself. What do you think?
You know me, I'm fluffy clouds, rainbows and unicorns. I just want everything to be nice and everyone to get on. And they're so obviously a good couple that the fact that they seem to be, you know, stringing this out with the not will she, won't she, but how is she going to do it? I'm just like, oh, come on. You know he's going to say yes, right? I cannot see how Jazza could actually say no. This man has wanted a family for so long, and he's so, and they're obviously a great unit. Here's another pointer as to how well Chelsea has kind of bounced back, that, you know, she's now willing her mum to be happy and, you know, go for it, mum type of thing. And then we have the contrast with Ben falling to pieces.
But also Brad.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. Brad's so totally smart, and he couldn't articulate why his gut feeling was, I don't think this is a good idea, right? He couldn't articulate it. So then had to go upstairs, come back with an Excel spreadsheet. And it's like, he has no real objection. But I suppose when you look at it, as far as he's concerned, things are kind of all right as they are. You know.
So why change it?
Why change it? Jazz has come in. It's all right. Why change it? But he'll come round in a nanosecond.
Yeah. I liked Marie's suggestion that actually Jazza's going to take it all out of Tracy's hands and organise something behind her back, and it'll all be fait accompli. Nice suggestion.
Well, that would be quite nice if he says, I've got something to tell you. She says, I've got something to tell you. And they both give each other a ring at the same time. Yeah. Many moons ago, I think it was my first Christmas after I got married. So the other half was really into Strictly, funnily enough. And you'll have to tell us what's happened. And, you know, the Argentinian tango is just so spectacular. It's a showstopper. So I went off and got Argentino tango lessons for us for Christmas. I handed her the envelope.
Wow.
She handed me an envelope. It was for Argentinian tango lessons with exactly the same teacher. I had to ring up 5 days later. That teacher never stopped laughing for 5 minutes.
How fantastic. Yeah, great minds think alike.
So maybe we're in for something similar.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? I think it'll be a happy ending. And you know, as it all started with the conversation about them bickering, they're so alike. You know, bickering's part of their kiss and make up.
Is it part of their love language, is it?
I think it is. It's them, part of them.
Mm-hmm. So you and Monsieur Berto, are you complementary? Do you complete each other's whole, or, you know, how does that work?
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect. Sounds like a marriage made in heaven. How do I say heaven?
Sanguin. Disso.
Right, now, the best and the easiest way for you to record a message or a plot prediction is to go to www.speakpipe.com/dumptydum. Don't forget the T in the middle. And you can also find a link in our show notes.
We need your calls in by 6 p.m. on a Sunday UK time. Please keep your call to a maximum of 2 minutes. And bear in mind, you need to be at least 18 to take part.
Now we need your help. This is the People's Podcast. After all, that phrase was coined by R. Stephen Bowden. So there are a few things you can do. First off, if you haven't done so already, hit the subscribe button on whatever podcatcher you're listening to us on. And in the review section, give us a 5-star review. It will be hugely appreciated. Now, it has to be said, 5-star reviews are most awesome, but some 5-star reviews are worth more than others, i.e. the ones done on Apple Podcasts. So if you can go to Apple Podcasts, write us a 5-star review. It'll be hugely appreciated by us. There's a link in the show notes as to how that can be done. Now, finally, the third thing you can do is to consider becoming a patron. Patron is a way of tipping creators, and there are different levels with different rewards. So if you just go to patreon.com, search for Dumpty Dum, we'll be chuffed to bits to have your support. So you can go and be a supporter of all things Dumpty Dum, just like Kay Hopper, who is sponsoring the show this week. Also, if you'd like to just give us a one-off donation because it's Christmas and Madame Berto is low on logs that she's nicked from the forest in San Gwen, right? So maybe she can go out and buy some proper ones. You can hit the donate button on dumdydum.com. Now, before we go back to our calls, don't forget you can send us an electronic missive if you don't fancy hearing your voice by going on to WhatsApp. And the number for that is +447 957 167 696. That's +447 957 167 696, which is an awesome way of getting your thoughts and feelings onto the show. Now back to our...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Calls. And we only have one more.
Hi, Roy Field and Jacqueline. They're all Dumpty Dummers. This is David Mullis. Thank you for the Daves. Just calling in, as I wanted to again talk about this wonderful storyline with Joy and how she was so brilliant with Ben. Obviously, my own personal circumstances, as you've heard recently with my parents, involved a lot of work with third parties who are able to been talking sympathetically to both of my parents and their circumstances. And then particularly in the case with my mum, we had an absolutely wonderful social worker who was really able to help mum understand that while my dad was recovering and convalescing in hospital, that she would need assisted care so we could help look after her due to her ongoing battle with dementia and Alzheimer's. Now, the whole plot and storyline with Ben, as I've alluded to, it really rings true in not knowing what to do and what has happened in this terrible manic episode that he seems to have experienced, but having such a wonderful outlet as somebody like Joy, who was really able to talk to him on a really sympathetic and human level, but then also help David through the process, has been absolutely wonderful to listen to, and really makes for absolutely wonderful viewing of The Archers. On a separate note, just as an update, my mum's still in respite care at the moment whilst my dad recovers, but he should hopefully be home in the next few days and we'll get settled in and hopefully have the family back together in almost an artist-like Christmas plotline. Separately, Royfield, in the last podcast, you also wanted to know what people do for a living and what field of expertise they're in. Now, I work in hospitality and hotels in particular, so I'm more than happy to devote my time when I'm not working to what's going to be happening with Grey Gables and when it's the refurbishment's going to be complete. And also, if they are soon to be complete and ready to go, they should surely be looking at opening up the booking channels for reopening sales. A little bit of industry jargon there for you. Take care.
Thank you, Mr. Dave. All right, do you want to
Dave.
Jump in to the meat of his call?
Yeah, first I want to say I'm glad to hear that your dad's recovering.
Absolutely.
And hopefully, I hope your mum's coped with the respite care. And wouldn't it be lovely to have you all united for Christmas? I think that's a nice rounded end to the story. I know the ongoing story with your mum's going to be difficult, but there we go. Hospitality as well. We need a lot of hospitality experts.
We do.
Here. Maybe you can get we're sorted for Birmingham. Maybe you can help out with that,
David. That's a stunning idea. Well done, Madame Berto.
Whew. And I agree entirely with the Joy Ben storyline. I mean, it's been brilliantly acted, it's been brilliantly written, and the praise for the social work. Now, I have to say, there's been an ongoing Twitter-arty thing about nobody in the world gets treatment as quickly as that and blah, blah, blah. This is an Archers, it's not the real life. But I have to say, I do know someone who, in England, who had a manic period, manic episode, and was asked at the hospital about whether they had suicidal thoughts. And they had, when they went home from hospital, because there were no psych beds available, they went home from hospital to their parents' house, and a nurse visited every day for at least a week and a half afterwards because of the threat to suicide. An adult, a young adult as well, you know, over the age of majority, just like Ben. And the care, it wasn't in a rural place, it was in York, but you know, so
yeah, we know that the NHS is taking somewhat of a battering in terms of the resources that it needs, and the nurses are going out on strike soon, which is somewhat unprecedented. Yeah. But in terms of, and I think I've had said this on Dumdy Dum, but my uncle who died of Alzheimer's this year, the level of care that he had was exemplary to the point of maybe being a little bit too much. You know, my aunt said he had two nurses who came round twice a day, three care workers that came round, was it three times a day? She said the place was literally like Piccadilly Circus. Yes, it's not, you know, a manic episode in this regard, but just lionizing the great work that our National Health Service does. And yes, they need more resources. Yeah. You know, we shouldn't forget what a great insurance it is for us all when we fall ill. And I contrast that with the American healthcare system. And I'm making a party political broadcast for the NHS party here. So my uncle is currently, and I think I mentioned him last week, my uncle is currently in Los Angeles and is properly poorly sick, gravely ill. We could well be just counting down the days. He has made somewhat of a rally since the family have flown in to see him, because we all know he'd actually given up. But seeing his son, he seems to have perked up a little. Anyway, the point of this whole story is this. So he couldn't urinate, and as well as just being incredibly stick thin, the doctors know that he has a blockage, and he's been in hospital for 2 weeks. He has not been diagnosed as to what's caused the blockage. What they have done is to alleviate the blockage, put a catheter there. So his kidneys now have some level of function and they're not bleeding. 2 weeks, and the hospital want him out of that bed. And they've been saying, where's his insurance? Where is his insurance? Now, my folks have come over from the UK. We do not understand the healthcare system, let alone what insurance he might have. It's actually transpired that he has the basic, which is Medicare, because he's 68, then plus another tier on top. But the thing is, after 2 weeks of being in hospital bed, he's not been diagnosed, because that hospital will not do any scans because there's a cost associated. And the cost of a scan is about $1,500. So before they do a scan, they need to know they're going to get paid. Now, I say this to everybody in Britain and everybody in a country which has universal health care, hold that service dearly as a right. Do not let any politician tell you that the American system, where if you have enough money and you can pay, is any path to go down. It so isn't. And this terribly scary thing is about it, is when we ask one person, we get one answer as a way to proceed. We ask a doctor, we get another. We ask somebody else, we get a Americans don't know how this system works. Other than have as much health insurance as possible, and you might be all right. So if you happen to be on a modest wage or poor or just getting by, right, healthcare in America can be something which is negligible. If you fall over, you'll be scooped up and taken to a hospital. All they'll do is put a plaster on you and send you out the door. They will not treat and diagnose. Maybe the reason why you fell over is because you've got some kind of balance issue. They're not interested unless you can pay. It's utterly shocking. I love the NHS. Every country that has universal healthcare, it's a fundamental right which keeps some level of a level playing field for all members of society. We've got to hold on to it. Viva the nurses. Yeah. Give them their pay. We know that they're overworked and underpaid. Ditto the doctors. Anyway, there's my party political broadcast for the NHS party done and dusted. And again, I haven't let anything outside of the world of Ambridge intrude onto the podcast. I'm good like that.
Indeed not. You're so constrained. Constrained. You're constrained by something and restrained by yourself. So where do we go from here? Well, that's all our caller inners, isn't it?
Caller inners are done. Now it's on to emailer inners.
Yeah. So we had three messages this week. And the first one is from Debbie. And she says, I'm going to say it in Debbie's voice. Oh, for goodness sake, Royfield. I've actually paused listening to Dumpty Dum to stop and write this. With scones or scones, it's extremely straightforward knowing what to put on first. You put on whatever has the firmest consistency first. If it's clotted cream and floppy jam, you do the cream first, because clotted cream's thick, you know, Rife. If it's fairly solid jellified jam and floppy cream, you do the jam first. There's no way that it's possible to spread something with a firm texture on top of something with a floppy texture. And Bob is your uncle. Simples, hey? There you are, Royf. Got it now? Flexibility is the key.
There comes a point when the barbarians are at the door and you need to maintain standards. And this is what this is all about. There's a reason why we have something called etiquette. rules so that
what?
We
etiquette.
Yeah, exactly. Etiquette. So that we convey by our manners the correct way of doing something to others. You know, it's just this unwritten code. And I put it to every dum-de-dum. I put it to the 70% that are wrong on the poll, that when the barbarians are at the door and they tell you they're going to burn your house down, if you do not put the jam on first and the cream on top, you say, absolutely not. You say, absolutely not. I will die on this principle because it's the right thing to do. Let us move on to another message. And this one's from Mike Jennings. Also, to add my thoughts on Ben. What an awful time he's experiencing. And it was honestly awful and utterly believable listening to his episode breakdown at the end of the omnibus. Fantastic writing and acting by everyone involved. I just hope this storyline causes more people to think about how they address male mental health issues in the future. Over the past month or so, I've seen lots of comments across Archer's Facebook groups that broadly fall into two categories. He's being so self-indulgent, or he needs to snap out of it. And both of those comments, to me at least, act like he's choosing to behave this way and that he can just choose not to behave this way. When your brain is running away with you, that's just not the case. You're a passenger to the illness. When people respond to people in clear distress with comments about being self-indulgent or telling you just to snap out of it, it only contributes to feelings of isolation and hopelessness, and is a significant reason why there are so many men, and it's a significant reason why so many men feel ashamed about their mental health and do not seek help. Bravo to you, Mike. Bravo. Utterly well said.
Ditto. Bravo,
utterly well
Mike.
Said. I also think as well, because this is a drama and we're viewing this from 30,000 feet up, so to speak, there is on the one level a sense of attachment when storylines really resonate, but also detachment. And I'm sure if this was somebody in the lives of somebody who was making those comments, they wouldn't actually act or be so judgmental, because this would be somebody who you care about. But you make the point fantastically well.
Yeah, he does. Very, very good point, Mike. Thank you for that. Now, our last message comes from Christine, also known as Gadget Girlie in Scotland. Good afternoon, Royfield and Jacqueline and all Dumpty Dummers. I hope this finds you well. I'm deliberately sending this before England play France this evening. That was very kind of her, wasn't it? I have been really moved by this week's storylines. However, I was very surprised on Monday that a nurse was visiting Ben so quickly. In Scotland, some people are waiting for months for help, mental health support. Then we heard why, his suicidal thoughts. Well, thank goodness that Leonard told Pip what Ben had shared with him and that Ben has now spoken to his parents. I was also very moved by the comparison between Ed and Emma's lifestyle and that of Fallon and Harrison. However, when Emma was talking about taking action, I thought she was going to campaign against fuel poverty, not necessarily divest the rewilding project of the Homes for Their Bugs. Oh, and she's female, and her husband proposed to her.
Well, funny you should say that, right? But we do have the results of my very unscientific poll. Now, you, Madame Berto, said that everybody else was, well, not everybody else. You said that I was old-fashioned. I needed to get up to date. It's 2022. You've been married a few times, you said, three times to be precise. And how many times had you done the asking, did you say?
Oh, thousands.
Okay. You've asked 1,000. You've asked 1,000 men to marry you, but only 3 actually said yes. That's a very poor success rate.
I know. I'm useless, aren't I? I'm absolutely useless. Do you know? I don't know what happened with this poll. I didn't see this poll.
No, because it was on WhatsApp. WhatsApp. Remember last week I said send through on WhatsApp if you've done the asking and what your gender was, etc. Okay, now.
So that's this is all in secret. So I didn't even get to vote.
Well, if you listen back to the podcast, the instructions were pretty clear because we had 14 people respond. 14 people.
Oh, well done. 14. I thought the script had changed in between me going out to watch Strictly and coming back in. It seemed a bit bigger.
14 responses.
Wow, that's fantastic. 12
men
people
did
dedicated?
The asking.
Oh,
one mutual and one woman who asked. So there you go.
Can we just read a few of them? I'm interested now.
You're interested now.
Oh, no, Mike Jennings.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's quickly go through this.
So this confused me because we had a message from Debbie and then Debbie also sent a WhatsApp.
Absolutely.
It's because there's no punctuation in the script. All
right.
So Debbie said, I'm female and my husband proposed to me.
All right. Okay.
That's good.
Right.
So that's
Mike Jennings said, hello, hope all is well. Just listening to this week's podcast, superb, and wanting to add my vote on the marriage front. I proposed to my beautiful wife, Beth. So that's a male proposing to a female. I was going to do it in public in a nice park, but got too nervous. So we went home and I did it at home and was still so nervous that I fell into an error full of washing that was drying. So there you go.
How romantic, Mike. Aww. So this one's from Rob. I'm male and I may have vocalised the question, but never said, will you marry me? I always ask the object of my affections whether they thought that us getting married was a good idea or not. Now, Rob doesn't tell us what his successful rate was either, but it was him that asked.
But it's got to be better than asking 1,000 men and only getting 3 yeses. You know,
yeah, I tell you, I'm a failure at this thing. Thank goodness I found Loic now.
And then lastly, so just a quick selection, and then so we just go for 4. Helen says, not altogether sure how this fits into your binary question. It was a joint decision, but it was my suggestion. So I'm putting you down actually as you did the asking then. Not very romantic, I'm afraid. There you go. So thank you for the 12 people who responded that proved in this very unscientific survey that doesn't matter how evolved we are in 2022, fundamentally, men still do the asking. And you, Madame Berto, are an exception, and more power to you.
Yeah, I'm an exception anyway on almost every level, Roy Phil. So let's just go with that.
All right.
Oh, I shouldn't have said, no, you've got to cut that out now because
why?
Because I've just watched the Strictly semis at my friend's house because she's leaving now and so I'll never be able to watch it again with her this season. And there was one of the dancers talking about their partner and he said, she's so humble. It was an Italian dancer. She said, he's so humble. And my friend Tracy and I have decided we've both got to try and be more humble. And so I shouldn't have said that, should I? I've just realised I've broken the trying to be more humble rule already. Damn. She won't listen to this, I'm sure, but her husband might. So he'll report it all back to her. So then, are we going to look at Facebook?
Yes, let's
now?
Go and see what our Facebook posse have been up to and what they've been talking about on Facebook.
Hello, you two. Before looking at what the Dumpty Dum Facebook group had to say about last week's events in Ambridge, I want to mention what we had to say about last week's episode of Dumpty Dum, and in particular, the discussion of scones. Ruth Pearl created a poll asking which went on first, jam or cream. And with almost 150 votes cast, the answer was clear. 27% of Dumpty Dummers were right, and 63% were wrong, with the remaining 10% coming up with sneaky ways of not answering the question. But there were no scones in Ambridge this week. Instead, there were 2 characters whom the Facebook group discussed in some detail. The world needs more joy, declared Harry Clark. Kate Lyle had a different view. I agree that Joy was absolutely fabulous with Ben, just perfect. But what else has she ever done to make people love her? Surely up to now she's just been awful. Elizabeth Llewellyn is in the pro-Joy camp. I think Joy has been delightful right from the first. Yes, she had a bit of a learning curve for the first time living in a farming community, but I found her kind, compassionate, and fun. And Paul Newman had some examples of her goodness. She stepped in for Lee as a nude model. She volunteered to help Pat at a festival. She chucked out her hot tub to avoid upsetting the neighbours. She's been a great friend and support all round. Penelope Matheson was less keen. I think a lot of people are quite unrealistic about Joy. I moved from a flat that I loved because of a neighbour like her. She didn't respect boundaries, physical or emotional. I'm an artist, and she could not understand that just because I was at home, I was available for chit-chat when I was working. Not awful, Sally and Alan suggested, but needy. Sheila English agreed. Joy hasn't been awful. She may have been over-eager to want to fit in, but she's been very helpful and nice to everyone. But Marie Montgomery had a theory about Joy. I still think it could be a witness protection situation. Meanwhile, Millie Hart was not afraid to express her views on another Ambridge incomer. Sorry, but I really can't stand Leonard. And Penelope Matheson agreed. I don't like him either. But then, I don't like any of them except Brian. Justina Novakovska could also see where Millie was coming from. Usually I love Leonard, but when he bought that cake from Jill, he became a flying monkey, hated it. Jill should have come personally and apologised. Fiona Hayton took a different view. I think he's lovely, but I haven't listened to the last week or so. If he's interfering, though, it comes from a good place, and I'm sure he'd hate to be seen as annoying. Brenda Spencer was all in for Leonard. I adore him. He's sensitive, caring, and attentive to others. And Elizabeth Llewellyn was in the same place. How could anyone not like Leonard? He's so kind and has so many talents. David's treatment of Leonard when he turned up on Sunday bearing chocolate cake didn't go down well with Darcy Jorgensen. David was rude. We all know what he said to Leonard was clearly and explicitly meant for Jill. Does that qualify as passive-aggressive? Or is simply David being a cheese weenie? Sally Hall was more relaxed about it. I think I can forgive David in the short term. Realisation is dawning, and he's angry with himself for being blinkered so lashing out. I doubt Leonard knows the full story about Jill's remarks. Maybe just her watered-down version. Fortunately, he's a kind soul and will somewhat understand David's angst. And Sean Brown was very much on David's side. I thought he was remarkably restrained. Jill's horrendous comments to Ben are partly to blame for tipping him into some sort of breakdown. And she thinks that chocolate cake will solve it? Wow. But it was Rob Williams who asked the question most of us were thinking. I know I'm taking the wrong thing away from the original post, but... Cheese Weenie? Darcy, I have to know more. Elsewhere, Zoe Picton flagged up a carol concert in London on the 13th of December, at which Tamsin Gregg, our very own Debbie Aldridge, will be doing some readings. Carolyn Wright posted a tale from her father's youth, when he and his brothers gathered up wood from around the village and sold it to the villagers, just like Ed and Emma were discussing doing. I created a poll asking what we thought Jazza would say to Tracy's proposal. It's early days yet, but the current situation has 69% of us saying he'll say yes, and 27% saying he'll say no. And we all wished Royfield a very happy birthday. And with that, I'll return you to the studio.
Thank you, Stephen. That was an awesome roundup of the week's goings-on on Facebook. Doesn't matter that it was a little bit long. It was long, but a good one.
Very good. And this week, Royfield, we had loads of lovely new members. So we've got to wish a very warm dumpty-dum welcome to...
Irene Muldoon.
Sarah Ferguson.
Joe Lloyd.
Susie Taylor.
Eleanor Sloan.
Marty Drupadi.
That's a lovely surname. Sally Kelly.
And Emma Boswood. So, Royf, how many five-star reviews did we have this week?
Mille point.
Ugh.
None. Zilch.
I thought we'd at least had 2-1.
Oh, whatever.
You know, all what? Right, we'll move you know on what swiftly
the,
on.
Yeah, tell you what the French nation needs to be is a little bit more humble. Right, it's like
they do
the
need
braggadocio this swagger of Le Bleu, right, is really quite nauseating from this side of the channel, and you people need to keep it
Atlantic.
Down.
You're on the other side of the Atlantic.
And that's how nauseating it is. Even from my side of the Atlantic, I can see the French strutting around like the peacocks that they are. It's really quite nauseating.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you what. Ugh. Last night, three English people sat in a beautiful bar, local bar with local beer, watching the French around. And it was so civilized. And at the end, so many people came up to us and shook our hands and said, "You played so well." Not as if we did. I was sitting there knitting and drinking beer. But, But people said how well England played. So, you know, that's what it all counts. And the French were very polite in Mur de Bretagne. So there we go.
Because in my 54 years, and in just about every person's years who listens to this podcast, we've never seen England win at a major tournament where the men are playing. I know the women did well, not taken away from the Lionesses, right? But there is generations worth of underachievement, shall we say. Let's say this was very different. The result is one thing, but the performance is completely and utterly another. Oh, God. I was in a bar. In a bar. There were hundreds of people. I would say it was maybe 60-40 English. A lot of French there. A lot of English jerseys in California. A lot of French jerseys. There is something really quite special watching live sport in a crowd. And the ripples of excitement, the oohs and the ahs, you know, when the decision goes against you and people jump up and they're waving their arms in anger, that communal sensation of watching sport, you can't really replicate that in too many other bits of life, especially when it's all done in a really friendly manner. There was no rancor, there's no threatening for 90 minutes. The French are the worst and the English are arrogant and whatever. And then afterwards, after the result, you drown your sorrows for a minute and then offer a Frenchman a pint of beer and it's awesome.
Indeed. But I have to say, this was the first time I've ever seen any sports match with a group of people in a bar.
Really?
It was my first time. Yeah, never. Once I was sitting outside a bar when there was a rugby match that England won. Mm-hmm. But it was the first time I've ever been. It was only because our English friends and Loic wanted to watch a match together, so we decided to go to the local home, you know, brasserie where they make their own beer and everything. So it was all very civilized, and there were about 30 people in the room, and as I say, there were us three originally English, all living in France now. So it was a win-win situation for us, really, because even Andy, our friend, wore a French jersey. So it was all very, very. It's good for human nature, as you say. Yeah, there's a whole rivalry, but. It reassured me that it's good to be human with other people. Human. That's the wrong expression.
That communal experience is utterly vital, and all the rivalry and the invective is done in somewhat of a pantomime way, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is. So we get to talk about Twitter now, because we've wanged on a bit, haven't we? Let's talk about Twitter.
That's the word of the week, isn't it? Wang.
It is. Wanging on. So didn't check to see if we'd reached our 10,000, our 1,000 mark. I'll just have a quick look while you're talking about Twitter.
All right. Now, we are on Twitter under @dumdydum. We always include the Archers hashtag using a capital T and A so that the visually impaired can enjoy any Archers-based tweets. Also, that hashtag is your opening for the tweet along, both in the evenings and during the omnibus. Please try and include @dumdydum in your tweet so more people get to see it, which helps to keep our community growing.
We've got 9,158 followers. I don't think we're going to make 10,000 by Christmas.
There's always Christmas 2023.
Yeah. We'll keep at it.
We will. We'll keep on. As well as being @dumdydum on Twitter, where can you be found, Madame Berto?
I am @jberto51.
All right. Now, if you're doing Twitter, it must be time for Purple Pumpkin and her tweet of the week.
Hello, Royfield, Jacqueline and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with a selection of tweets of the week. And for the Mastodon gang, there's also one toot of the week. So I'll start with the toot. It's from Cara Schallenberg @kray@zerk.us. If there's anything worse than making small talk over dinner, it's listening to Ed and Emma and Fallon and Harrison making small talk over dinner. Gah! Couldn't agree more. Over on Twitter, the juxtaposition of joy and the storyline about the competing choirs was too much temptation for many. There were a lot of riffs on comfort and joy to the world, but no one's yet mentioned joy has dawned upon the world or how great our joy. Surely that must come. And so to the Twitter medals. In bronze position, it's Nick @checkyoursheds. Oh, Emma, I'm not sure a Grundy nicking stuff is quite as original and unique as you might think. In silver, it's Madding Crowd at Further From. Yay! Brad is actually going to succeed, escape Ambridge, and become the next Q. A Bond Archers crossover is what we've all been waiting for. And in gold, it's Leonard Odetian at Odetian. I'm so excited by the choir competition now that England are out of the World Cup. Yes, Leonard, you speak to all our pain. That's it for this week. Hope to see you all on Twitter next week.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Theo. Thank you for everybody, and congratulations and well done, everybody who sent in tweets or toots. Now, if we're talking about social media, we can also be found on Instagram. You can follow us on @dumdydum there, and you'll be in the capable hands of Katie. She's kind of quite awesome.
She is indeed. So thanks as ever to all our contributors and to our social media supremos, Shambridge for her voices, and to our podcasting godmother, Lucy V. Freeman.
There you go. That's the end of a dum-de-dum. Any final words from you, Madame Berto? I must admit, if I've sounded slightly subdued this week, it's because I am. I hate football. I hate everything it does to me as a man, as a human being. It builds me up only to rip me down and to fundamentally to disappoint. I'm not going to watch another game of football to the day I die. World Cup, blah.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.